And of course, this is the hour that you're part of, the interactive hour, Conversations with Linda. And we'll go right to the calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, by the way, I need to congratulate you for your work on the Monarch butterfly disaster. Mainstream is just starting to pick up on that story.
And I received an email from Dr. Brower that I did the interview at Coast about his watching the migration and being so concerned about the fact that they were seeing so few monarch butterflies. And he wrote to me yesterday that right now this is the lowest they have ever seen, and disastrous news that the monarch butterflies overwintering in Mexico have hit another all-time low. And he sent me a graph, which I'm going to put together another story. But the bottom line here is, these aren't words anymore when they talk about the end of that incredible migration to Mexico. This may be it.
This could be it. And what's new with the honeybees, by the way?
Well, you've probably seen those stories about a plant virus affecting the honeybees, and they're trying to say that maybe that is responsible. And every time I see a headline like that, I keep coming back to Dave Hackenberg in Pennsylvania when I interviewed him back, what now, 5-6 years ago. And he said that he and other beekeepers were convinced that it was the nicotine-based pesticides back then because of what they had seen. And we've been through this evolution. We know that Europe has been banning the nicotine-based pesticides right and left, and they're getting their honeybees back. And in the United States, what again is driving it? The profits and the greed of companies that are producing these nicotine-based pesticides, that there is now so much growing medical evidence that it's one of the worst things we've ever put in the environment, and that it is more responsible for the death and destruction of honeybees than just about anything else. And in the spring, there is a very important work that has been done in Canada, and I hope to do a Coast about that, that ties directly to the nicotine base and what is happening to the pollinators. And I think that the monarchs, George, are part of this, that what is affecting the honeybees and the bumblebees is affecting the monarch butterflies, and that we're in a syndrome here in which the environment that humans are, I'm going to say, reconstructing is killing off some of the earth life that we need so badly.
All right, let's go to the phones. They're lining up for Linda here. Kathy is in Metairie, Louisiana. Hello, Kathy. Go ahead.
Yes. Monsanto is producing seeds that don't reproduce or can't be reused from the plants.
Yeah.
Where is Monsanto constantly getting their new supply of seeds?
They genetically make now whatever they want to make in laboratories, patent it, and sell it. And these Terminator seeds are a specific new aspect of the genetically engineered agriculture in which Monsanto and Syngenta and some of these companies, they have sued farmers that have ended up having the patented seed crops, volunteer plants and stuff. And now this all grew up with the idea that if they could control the second generation from any seeds, meaning they could turn them into sterile, that they couldn't grow plants, then Monsanto and Syngenta and Dow, they would all have control on the money flow of their patented seeds, and they have a stated goal to be in control of 100% of the world's food supply. That's what they want. And the Terminator seed then plays this role of controlling second generation seed production. And they can argue, well, if these Terminator seeds go blow off into some farmer's field, we don't have to worry. And the farmer doesn't have to worry because these are not seeds that will ever grow plants. And that, to Jeffrey Smith and to an awful lot of people, is not the attitude that we should be having on a planet that is working for 10 billion people, huge swaths of the earth, India and Africa and other places. The farmers depend upon collecting their best seeds out of every single harvest so that the next year they have the strongest seeds to replant. That is what farmers have been doing for thousands of years. So now suddenly we're up against a brand new way to try to engineer control over the seeds so that they can get only 1 year of growth. Then they have to go back and buy the new patented seeds from Monsanto or Dow or Syngenta. And the very fact that the landowners in Brazil who want these trees to grow fast on acreages would argue that if they can use Terminator seeds for the trees, there won't be any second generation worry about where those trees blow the seeds that are patented. My heavens above, what a strange crossroads to be hitting in 2014, that now the idea that we're going to control what seeds blow someplace by making them sterile, and that the environmentalists who say this is really asking for trouble as we go down through the century of what will we end up with genetically modified crops that are reducing the strains, that are now introducing Terminator seeds, and we don't have a clue what the planet could look like in terms of food production in another 90 years with all of this happening.
Linda, what's going on with the seed bank that they have tucked away somewhere?
In Norway. It's on it's kind of an island or a peninsula. And all I know is that somebody who was very, very, very ahead of their time, thank heavens, said, we've got to get all of the seeds that we can from every species on the earth and put them in this seed bank, because the way this planet is going, we are reducing the number of crops, the species of crops, what's available to plant every year. It's becoming more and more narrow. And scientists will always say it is only with biodiversity that you have strength and you have more resistance to disease and to climate change. And we're going completely the opposite direction by genetically engineering crops that come down to a specific type in 9 or 10 species that they now want control, and these patented seeds down to even second generation. And that means narrowing the crops down even more. And on the other side of that, when you reduce biodiversity and you take seed, we'll call it culling the strongest seeds for the next year's growth, when you take that out of the equation, you risk the possibility that something is going to come along and it's just going to smash. It's going to destroy whatever those crops are that are genetically engineered, and we won't have a backup. Well, that's where that Norway seed bank comes into play. That depending upon the future, as long as we've got every possible strain that has been growing on this planet, and they've been gathering it in that Norway seed bank, we could start over in a more healthy balance.
All right, we go to Joe now in Caribou, Maine. Hello, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Hi, George, Linda. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, sure thing.
I wanted to mention the thing about the trumpeting sound that the people have been hearing.
Right.
In the Bible, Revelation 14:2, it says, "And I heard a voice from heaven, as a voice of many waters, as the voice of great thunder." I hear a voice of hoppers hopping on their hops.
Yeah, many people have talked about that since the first recordings emerged in 2011, and people were saying these sound like trumpets or metal scraping or horns. And the sense is by a lot of people that that particular sound comes from the air. But what's so confusing is that loud booms sometimes precede the trumpets or follow the trumpets. And many people think that the booms are coming from below ground, while the trumpet and horn sounds are coming from the air, adding to the confusion. And then you have this whole question, what if we are dealing with something that is in the earth itself, something changing in the core of the earth, the whole lava up to the mantle, and the possibility of infrasound, which we know does exist around moving magma underneath the crust of the earth. And the infrasound could be doing some weird thing, bouncing out of the crust up to the ionosphere and coming back and making these sounds. That's not proved, but that's been one of the theories. All the way to what you have just suggested. Could we literally be in a time, 2011, 12, 13, now going into 14, in which some other dimension, I don't know how else to characterize it, that some other dimension is penetrating or overlaying ours, and that these periodic sounds are from something like that? And the question that hangs out there is, I have the impression, it isn't mathematically rigorous yet, but we're working on a map, a timeline map, a bunch of us, but I have the impression that the booms, at least, are increasing, both in frequency and the number of places in which it's occurring simultaneously. George, I don't know if you sense that from what you're getting in emails, but I'm actually working with people. We're trying to map this in terms of chronology.
Any updates on anything? The Baltic Sea?
Yes. In fact, I have corresponded with Peter Lundberg, and they are hoping that they're going to be able to get down there again this spring, and they did try in the fall. There might have been, but they've had all kinds of technical problems. And he said that even some of the crew wonder, are they having technical problems because they're trying to go down to investigate further this unknown on the Baltic and it's radiating something, or are they just having lots of technical problems because what they're trying to do is so difficult, which is to get down in that cold, deep water and do more photography and do more measurements? And I'm hoping that if they do make this effort in March or April, that I'll be able to do an interview with him again. And this would be at the top of a coast, because I do think that there are increasing numbers, we'll call it underwater archaeology discoveries. They keep coming too. And that there recently has been another discovery in that part of the world in the Baltic Sea of what might be stone structures. And if the stone structures are in the Baltic Sea, and this strange object that Peter Lundberg and Team X have been trying to understand what it is also in the Baltic Sea, then how far back? 12,000? That's Göbekli Tepe. 15,000? That's the Sphinx. 30,000? We're getting back into a time where none of this is expected unless you, I'm going to say, unless you expand the possibilities here and say maybe there was an advanced intelligence or more going back 30,000 years up to somewhere around the last ice age with advanced technology, and that there were structures that were built and they went underwater when the ice melted, and that's what we're discovering, and that there may be a whole swath of archaeology that will end up filling books, because what we're starting to find is a new era of discovery that 5,000 years ago in Mesopotamia was not the beginning of civilization on Earth.
We go next west. Dan is with us in California. Hey, Daniel, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
I got a couple of quick comments and then to my question. In the last few weeks, I run into this guy that was really strange. He could have been an angel in disguise.
Ooh.
I asked him about when the rapture was going to happen, but he said he wouldn't tell me the day or the hour. That's reserved for only the Father.
That's true.
But he would tell me it'll be around the summer season 2016. Oh, boy, I hope he's right. Anyway, my other quick comment, and don't forget, one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse is famine. That means no food whatsoever. And that's going to be worldwide when that's fulfilled. Now, my question is, since I've been eating this GMO stuff, my sensitivities, I'm almost too sensitive to live on this planet in the first place, and now the food's so messed up, it's making my allergies go through the roof. I'm not going to be able to stay here much longer without getting out of my body there, George.
You're going to have to.
I'll let you guys talk about what I said off there, and I'll get to listening on the radio here.
Yeah, you're making a very, very important point about allergies increasing. There seems to be a relationship between allergic reactions to food that people didn't have before until the genetically modified engineering. And what precisely is happening is I don't understand. The biochemistry, like Monsanto would argue, it's chemistry. A carrot is a carrot is a carrot. It doesn't matter whether we make it or nature makes it, it's all the same. And what I think is beginning to become more and more clear is there is a difference. And whatever that difference is, when Jeff Smith was talking with parents, and he's been talking with a lot of them, and he was talking to me on the phone about so many discussions, of which a piece in the interview of the mother who had the 6.5-year-old boy who was just completely out of control, self-destructive, destructive to his environment, got this suggestion to take the child, put on a strict diet, and get all processed foods and GMOs and everything out of the child's diet. And within a very short period of time, started having a child who was calming down, allergies reducing, acting out behavior reducing. And Jeff Smith and the group that he works with, they have been trying to identify more and more of these cases, and now they're beginning to have these alliances with medical doctors who are convinced that there is something about the genetically modified crops that isn't just chemistry, that people and their systems and biochemical systems are having reactions to. And so now it's something that Jeffrey Smith says in his Institute for Responsible Technology that we need to be looking at medicine, and doctors are beginning to talk about when they have certain symptoms in front of them, and they say, try eliminating X, Y, and Z, and eliminating everything that can possibly be identified as genetically modified, and see what happens.
And it'll work. It'll work. We're coming back with Final Calls with Linda in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Linda and your calls. So let's go right to them. Next up, we go to Mark in Oregon. Hey, Mark, go ahead.
Hey, good evening, George and Linda.
You too.
Really want to thank you both for all of your excellent work through the years. I've been following you both a long time, and you know, you provide a tremendous service to humanity, and I think you deserve awards. So I gave you mine, huh?
Okay. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I really would like to ask Linda a question with a short preface, George. And if I may, I just wanted to remark quickly on the GMO issue. As I understand it, I believe it was Alex Jones that reported this or some such credible source. And that is that third world countries where I guess you would say Monsanto and its agents have attempted to import genetically modified food crops. They uniformly refuse to accept them. And this is true of other countries in the world. And Lynn, on a future program, perhaps you can get to the health aspects of GMO foods, because I'm sure you've done at least some research into that. And it's really horrendous what it's done to farm animals and lab animals that it's been tested on. So this is the other, this is maybe the nut of the matter as to why, you know, if it was nutritious and good for us, then there wouldn't be any fight back against it.
That's true.
Yeah, it is a very important chapter to do next, and that's exactly what Jeffrey Smith wants to do and I want to do, and that is we're beginning to see that there are doctors, there are medical research and evidence that we should be reporting. And so in 2014, I hope I can do several reports, and thank you. It's very, very important.
Yes, that's excellent, Linda. And my question to you, basically, to preface it quickly, the gentleman that you were interviewing earlier in the program talked about cycles, and you perhaps resonate to some degree with this as a possibility for what's really behind this and not the human agency, so to speak. When you look into your research of the years, Linda, I would be very curious if you could just quickly mention tonight overall what you have discovered about the organization called the Illuminati, the 85, the 20 top corporations that you named, and I believe it was another 65 that in total, with their boards, they have the total ownership or 90% of it at this point, of all of the world's economy, what generates it industrially and through manufacturing.
The 146 list.
And the Luciferian aspect, I understand from the research I've done and other top researchers through the years, has always been their spiritual discipline, and the one who they believe in as Almighty God is Lucifer. All right. He's otherwise known as Satan, aka the devil, and Slewfoot, and Moloch, and Horus, and it goes all the way through humankind's history. And they bring all of the maladies, these human agents of Satan, they bring all of the maladies in league with the demonic forces and Satan himself that mankind has suffered through the ages. And I think I would really like to hear you do a program on this, Linda, because I think we're getting, again, the nut of the issue, and you don't get a bigger issue than this outside of God Almighty himself, and it's not Satan.
All right, thank you.
Well, there definitely seems to be a yin and a yang, a negative, a positive. We could talk about it philosophically. When it comes to the 146 corporations on the list that have the potential to control 40% of that entire network, and that 750 control 80% of the network, I myself am not in a position to even go the step to say that everyone who is running a corporation and part of this network are evil. I don't go there. I don't think that's true. What we are dealing with is a planet in which there are growing numbers of inequities, and that it is so out of balance between the 1% versus the 99 or the 20 versus 80, whichever way you want to look at it, that something has to change. James Glatfelter, that's part of what's come out of his research. He feels there needs to be change. There needs to be change in the way the banks relate to the planet, because it's the banks that are now filling up these spots on these controlling entities. And what that takes is being aware that there is this strange cycle, or that scaling law, that distribution law, where whether you're dealing about biochemistry or nature or the barter system, that something seems to constantly bring 20% in control of 80%, and at when it's really out of balance, 1% of 99%, and that there is something, as he said, logarithmic that appears to take over when you get into large complex systems. And if humans would understand that and then be able to define systems that took that into account, and that we somehow could have more of a democratic distribution of the barter system on this planet without people being controlled by other people, that would be the ideal.
Okay, let's go back to the call. Stephen in Paducah, Kentucky, first-time caller. You're on with Linda, Stephen.
Doing pretty good. Good. To talk to you, George.
Thank you, sir.
In June of 2011, I was outside clearing some brush on my property, and I heard that trumpet sound that you were talking about earlier on the show.
Where are you physically?
I'm in Paducah, Kentucky.
Did you say Paducah?
Paducah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's Kentucky, yeah. Which has been probably, if I said there's one node point in the United States that has as much frequency of the booms and this whole issue of some of the trumpet reports, it's that Kentucky, Illinois area. So what happened?
Yeah, that's right where I'm at.
Right, what happened?
Anyway, I was out there clearing some brush, and I heard that sound. And as soon as I heard the sound, I recognized the sound. And I came inside and got on YouTube and started looking up a video and to confirm that that was the sound that I heard. But I went to a video, and immediately, as soon as I turned on the video, the same sound occurred, and it was the sound of a shofar, like a ram's horn.
Yes, the ram's horn.
The ram's horn. And the first thought I thought about was the scripture in Revelations where it's talking about the trumpet. And I know you're talking to a caller earlier about maybe the ground making that sound, but if you were looking at it in terms of Revelations and the end times.
Yes.
And it was the breaking of the seals and a warning to people that the time has come. I'm coming back very shortly.
Yes.
What if that trumpet sound was a warning to us?
Yes.
Awakening of the ground.
It has been discussed by so many people, and what intrigues me, for example, the Milton Vermont couple in my first half hour, they both had the sense of warning, creepiness. The next couple in Calgary a month later, that you can hear their entire experience through the wife at Earth Files in the MP3 in that report, they had the same reaction that something that was not good. They had an emotional response to the point that the husband has withdrawn, does not want to talk about it. His wife wanted to talk with me, but she said he has been completely upended by hearing this horn trumpet sound up in Calgary. And I wonder how many people out there have had that experience and they have withdrawn or they have shut down, where it might be healthier for them to talk to somebody like me and share. And in your case, what was your emotional reaction to the sound that you heard?
My emotional reaction, I just heard the sound, and I'm like, that is weird. And it sounded like it was coming from the sky, like there was an amplifier up in the heavens blaring down the sound.
I'd heard the
sound of that in my church before. There's a woman that actually blows a shofar in my church.
Right. And
that's why I actually recognized the sound. And when I went on to YouTube and looked at the video of somebody blowing, I'm like, that's the exact same sound.
Right.
And it was the exact same sound as the Kiev video, too.
Yes, it's in there. You're right. And did you find out if any neighbors heard it as well?
Well, actually, I've heard it twice now. I've heard it once a year later. I was sitting in my living room with a friend of mine, and we were sitting there, and I was telling him about that, and he thought it was kind of nuts. And we were watching Star Trek, and then all of a sudden that same sound came through again, and he heard it, and he's like, oh, my God, that's scary. And my fiance was at a Mexican restaurant about 4 miles away. She came home, and she said, did you hear that sound? But nobody else I know of has heard that sound.
So here's the question, Linda. Why do some people hear it, others don't?
Well, it's this question of focus. It's been one of the biggest baffling mysteries of the whole phenomena, that over and over again, a family in a house will report this experience and nobody else around in the neighborhood has heard it, or two families across from each other. And then, let's say that there have been a lot of isolated houses where the walls shake, they think something has collapsed on the roof. I mean, this is heavy duty. This is not mild. Each one of these, this is a heavy duty house shaking experience, but nobody else in a neighborhood has experienced it. That there's been that. Then you jump to Georgia, has had a whole lot of this phenomena for some reason. And it was a year and a half ago that five counties in Georgia, police, fire, all the authorities, they were getting calls simultaneously at the same time over five counties in Georgia. And last year, in about 12 months ago, there were something like five or six states within a very short period of time that there were all of these reports happening at the same time. Now, that means that some geography is five states wide that are impacted. Other geography is up to five counties, but the vast majority has been a house on a street where nobody else except the one house has had this experience. I don't understand that beyond the fact that if there is some sort of a focus point of whatever is generating it, the focus of the point that causes the resonance or the vibration of the sound can be down to the size of a house. That is very peculiar.
Linda, time for one or two more calls because I've got a programming note I've got to pass on to everybody. Let's go to Dennis in Miami, Florida. Go ahead, Dennis.
Yes. Good morning, George. Good morning, Linda.
Hi.
Has anybody done the study on the effect the oyster and the Gulf have the effect on the earth?
Any effect in the Gulf still, Linda, from that oil spill?
Well, I think if you knew what was happening to people medically and privately with doctors, that you would know that there are still health impacts. There certainly are stories that keep coming out in research reports about damage to life in the Gulf. But all of the facts about the impact on human health and marine health are not politically acceptable. And that's why this stays under the radar. Money, again, is the driving force to keep all of that quiet. And before we hit the end bell, George, I just wanted to say I'm really looking forward to seeing you in Los Angeles the 7th through the 9th of February. It's next weekend.
Yeah, Conscious Life.
Yeah, at the Conscious Life Expo. And I will be there. I'm going to be doing both a lecture and a workshop. And I'm going to be seeing you at that Beyond Belief Mixer on Saturday night, February 8th.
Okay, great. Linda, you take care of yourself, and we look forward to your next reports. Can you believe how fast this year's already clicking by?
I know. January is the fastest January I've ever known.
They're all going to be fast. That's the strange part about all of this. So you take care, travel well, and I'll see you in about a week.
All right, thanks. God bless everybody.
All right, so Linda Moultenhaugh. If you need more information on Linda, of course, you can go to her website, which is earthfiles.com. If you need to email her, that's earthfiles@earthfiles.com. Those of you who are brand new to the program, once a month, Linda comes to us and delivers these series of special reports from stories that she goes hunting for, and she's normally ahead at least by 2 months ahead of the mainstream media. That's pretty darn good. Anyways, I'll be taking Friday off, and filling in for me will be the very capable Richard Surrett from Toronto. Richard has done the program for us before. George Knapp will handle Saturday, and then I'll be back on Sunday. And of course, don't forget Emerging Artists. Now, as many of you know, for years, Ian Punnett was our regular host on Saturday. but for health reasons, he had to resign, and then we filled the slot with John B. Wells. John has decided to fulfill his own dream and do his own internet-based show, and I wish him very well in that endeavor. Now, in so doing, we've decided to get Saturdays back to its grassroots, covering all kinds of topics as we do now, but to concentrate more on the unusual and the paranormal. So for the foreseeable future, you'll hear various guest hosts on Saturday. George Knapp will be on this Saturday. You'll hear Dave Schrader, Rob Simone, and others. Eventually, we may decide on a regular Saturday host, but for now, we'll just go at it with the very capable guest hosts. And again, many thanks to John for his efforts. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Alex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.